tired of spills and stains on your sofa? Wash away your worries with Anabay. Anabay is the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly prices. That's right, sofas start at just $699. Enjoy a no-risk experience with pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and changeable slip covers made with performance fabric. Experience cloud-like comfort with high-resilience foam that's hypoallergenic and never needs fluffing. The sturdy steel frame ensures longevity, and the modular pieces can be rearranged anytime. Shop washablesofas.com for early Black Friday savings, up to 60% off site-wide, backed by a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not absolutely in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping or restocking fees. Every penny back. Upgrade now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
And Bob is shaking his head at me. Not a fan, are you, Bob?
The bluegrass? No, not really. Ricky Skaggs was there for a while, but I kind of draw the line there.
Yeah, that's where you draw the line.
I like my country, but... Yep.
You take your T.G. Shepherd.
Not,
I'll sleep at the wheel.
Leroy Parnell, I'll take him.
But you draw the line of bluegrass.
Mr.
No
Price,
mas.
Yep. No, that's right. So what'd you think? You were there...
Well, that was Trampled by Turtles,
yeah.
By the way. And they were exceptional. They're at the Meyer Theater last night. Downtown Green Bay, just across the river, and it was a good show, Bob. It was good stuff. I was told they came highly regarded from some people on Twitter, from some friends, and I'm a big Mumford & Sons fan, and they're basically like Mumford & Sons, but kind of on steroids. A lot of bluegrass, a lot of twang, but man, it was good. It was good stuff.
Wow. Impressive. It's a great theater, isn't it?
It is. That was my first time at the Meyer. Old school. Kind of has a good feel to it, a vintage kind of a feel.
Yeah.
And really cool.
Wonderful place, yep.
There's some underrated live music in Wisconsin, I got to say. Mm. There's been some good concerts here. The Black Keys last year in Milwaukee was unbelievable, so good stuff. But enough about that, Bob.
Okay.
We got to get into this Packers podcast.
Sure.
A lot to get into today. Donald Driver, we're going to talk about him and his ceremony. It was quite the retirement bash at Lambeau Field, Bob. So we'll talk about that. The Super Bowl down in New Orleans. You're down there on Bourbon Street, living it up.
I wish.
Come on now, you can let it loose here on the podcast. What did you do down there?
Work till night every night.
Okay, but a good time then. We'll get into it later. But
absolutely,
it was fun. Great game, entertaining game. I won't say great game, entertaining game.
Some interesting stories to write, so that was good. Yep,
absolutely. We have to finish our season in review with the special teams. We talked about the offense. We talked about the defense. We'll get into the special teams, finish that up. There was a Canadian guy that apparently almost signed with the Packers but couldn't pass his physical. You had the story on that this week. I'm not even going to try to pronounce his name. And then I talked to Charles Woodson's agent, Carl Poston. Interesting situation there, so we'll talk about that a little bit. Get into the offseason, start taking a look at a few things. It's still pretty early, but some things to touch on. And then on Twitter, we have some questions from all you guys, so... We'll get into a few of those, hopefully. But Bob, Donald Driver, now you had an interesting part in our coverage today, kind of looking back at the guy's career in 99, 2000, all the way through the grades that you do every year. Thought it was really interesting just to kind of see his evolution along the way.
Yeah, he started as number 13, Tyler, out of Alcorn State. I really don't remember him in the first training camp. I do not. He wore 13, he made the team, he switched to 80, and he's been there ever since. He was a tough guy on special teams. He made some tackles. I do kind of remember that summer in exhibition games. But now I'm looking through this year-by-year stuff, and, you know, same criteria. I'm just looking at this unbiased every year. At the end of his third year, I said he's a competent number four receiver, terrific special teams player, just not very big. Then he went up and had a great 0-2 season. Mm-hmm. This is what I forgot, though, you know. In 0-3, he started 15 games. And he's really a non-factor. I ended up, the year in 0-2, I gave him an A-. In 0-3, I gave him a C. turns 29 next month and is due a $1 million roster bonus, which might be tough for the front office to swallow.
Mm-hmm.
Can he accept being a number three receiver next year if it came to that? I mean, you know, these are the questions. But then he turned it on in 04, and then from there on, he was just a terrific player right up till near the end.
And before signing his first contract with the Packers, he talked about this at his retirement speech. He said that he never wanted to wear another uniform, and they wanted to keep that promise. So fast forward to today, the guy still wants to play. I mean, you can hear it in his voice. He believes he still can play, and I think he was genuine in saying that he really was seriously considering playing elsewhere. You know, it's hard for these guys to walk away, but when it came down to it, he wanted to preserve his legacy with the Packers, and my gosh, if you were there at Lambeau Field, it was quite the scene.
It was.
I mean, the whole atrium is packed. You have a rail kind of surrounding the first section right in front of Driver. I mean, there's fans with signs kind of hugging up against the rail like it was a rock concert. Fans were kind of snaking up the staircase to the second level, you know, where the Liney Lodge is up there, looking down. And as Driver cried, the fans cried. One fan said there wasn't a dry eye in the atrium, which it's kind of telling. I mean, this is a football player, but in, you know, unlike any player really before him, I mean, we'll get into that comparison a little bit with number four, but Driver connected with these fans in a special, different way. I mean, you've been covering this team a long time. Is this rare, what you saw with Donald Driver?
Yeah, I mean, you know, over 30 years of being around the team, Brett Favre, I mean, he was a larger-than-life character, obviously, for almost his entire career. People loved his shtick from Mississippi and really the unselfish team leader and the great swashbuckling player. Don Majkowski, you know, in 1989, he made the Pro Bowl. The team won 10 games out of nowhere. He was pretty big, too. He really was. Other players, Lynn Dickey to an extent. He was injured so much. I don't know. This Dancing with the Stars put Driver over the top.
I think that's what
it
was.
You could see it last spring and summer, minicamp, offseason. It was unreal.
I mean, you have your football fans. You have your Packer fans. And then when you did Dancing with the Stars, you know, mothers, sisters, aunts, all of a sudden his fan base just multiplies and grows exponentially. Mark Murphy, when he was talking about Driver at the ceremony, said that on the tailgate tour, fans were constantly asking him if one of the judges on Dancing with the Stars was biased against Donald Driver. I mean, that kind of stuff. I mean, say what you want about it. I didn't really watch the show that much, to be honest. It really kind of grew his fan base. And then at the charity softball game, after he won, his dancing partner, PETA, I think her name is, was there with him. The place was nuts in Appleton. And obviously we had that video of a middle-aged woman grabbing a Driver's cleat away from a 9 or 10 year old boy in the stands, which was a whole other story in itself. But the guy is a rock star. I mean, that's kind of what it was like there at Lambeau Field.
Yeah. And so now, every time he caught a ball in individual or sometimes I'd go over across, sit with the fans and I'd never really seen anything like it. I mean, you got Jennings and Nelson, these Finley making plays and fantastic plays. And Driver would make a routine catch, and that the place would just be up for grabs.
Yeah, it's true. Exactly.
He's screaming, Donald, Donald, you know, little kids, mothers, grandmas, guys, 40 years old, just on and on and on. It was really something, and that is carries till to today, no question.
One thing that stood out, talking to fans afterwards, one of the fans I talked to was actually Jackie Chiles from Seinfeld, the great attorney character. You don't watch Seinfeld, Bob? No dice?
Sorry, Tyler.
Oh, man. He had some epic one-liners in there. But he was there, the real actor himself, not Jackie Chiles, but the guy I think is, gosh, I'm calling him Jackie Chiles, Phil Morris, I believe his name is.
All right.
And kind of recognized him, talked to him. He said that back in 03, the season opener, he met Donald Driver after the game. They stayed in touch. They talk 3 times a month, keep each other updated on each other's careers, and are pretty good friends. So Driver invited him to the ceremony. I thought he made a good point. He said that fans relate to Driver because he's one of them. That the way he comes across is down to earth. They feel that they can just relate to the guy, which at that position is kind of rare. I mean, the position inherently creates egomaniacs. I mean, you only can control how many balls are thrown your way. So you got T.O. doing sit-ups in his parking lot. You got Randy Moss mooning fans. It's just kind of a nature of the beast at that position. And Donald Driver was different from the day he walked in to the day he left.
Yeah, he came from dirt, basically. His story is an incredible saga.
Yeah, and just to recap, they can check it out online, but Lori Nichol wrote an incredible story about all of that when he came in, lived out of a U-Haul truck, sold drugs to get by and survive. You know, it is kind of a made-for-movie kind of a beginning for the guy.
Yep.
So,
yep, okay.
So, I mean, he has this ceremony, he leaves. Now, to get to the football side of things, and I thought this was one of the most telling parts of his retirement speech. It lasted about 14 minutes, and there was laughing, there was crying, there was a little bit of every kind of emotion you can imagine. He went from thanking one person to the next, Bob Harlan, Ron Wolf, Ted Thompson. He gets to Mike McCarthy, and I think that that's when everything kind of set in for Driver. The guy wants to play. He wanted to keep playing. He's told us that multiple times. And he kind of looked at Mike McCarthy and said, quote, "I know where this team is going." And then there was this 13-second pause of nothing. He almost broke down, "but I love you." I mean, they had to have a heart-to-heart, right? I mean, I'm sure the Packers talked to Donald Driver. And look, they can give him this big ceremony, give him this big send-off, but there just wasn't a place for him on the team anymore.
That's right.
And
Was there a place on the team this year for him? If you want to put all sentiment aside.
Well, let's go back to training camp. I mean, the offseason darlings and, you know, all of us in the media are guilty of it. Torrey Gurley and DeAndre Burrell. That was a big offseason story. These two guys hung around on the practice squad throughout last season. In theory, you would think the Packers would want one of them to step up and maybe be a number six. Torrey Gurley was 6'4", big guy, offers a different dimension. DeAndre Burrell flashed some talent. First day of training camp, might have been the first day in pads, I'm not sure, first or second day, Driver catches, what, 3 touchdowns at practice?
Yeah.
From that point forward, there wasn't even a competition. He was going to be on the team. So, I don't know. I mean, to answer your question, I guess there really wasn't, because he was inactive by the end of the season and using special teams to get onto the field, which is pretty noble in itself, but there really wasn't a place for him.
So they kept, we're looking at our depth chart here, they kept 5 wideouts, right? No, they kept 6. Boykin was 6.
And then Jeremy Ross joined the group later on.
So Ross gave him 7.
Right.
Right. So who could they have kept in Driver's roster spot?
Get me going on Philip Merlin again.
He made it. He made the team.
Oh, he made the team.
First month. They could have kept Daniel Muir as an extra D lineman. They could have kept a corner from Youngstown, Brandon Ross, who went on to play for Oakland this year, and I think he did some really good things at the end of the year.
They liked him, too.
Anthony Levine, a safety they cut at the end, he was picked up by Baltimore, played a couple games for the Ravens, and then he landed on IR. Those are the choices. Lawrence Guy. They could have kept him. He played well now the last 2 months for the Colts. He played a lot of snaps for him. So, I don't know. I mean, I thought Driver was pretty good in training camp. I can't deny that. I thought he played better in training camp than he did in the regular season.
He did.
So
caught a couple touchdowns against the Bears and against Jacksonville, I believe. But really, 8 catches, didn't have much of an impact, couldn't get on the field. I mean, what are you going to do if you're Mike McCarthy? Are you really going to take out Randall Cobb to give Driver snaps? In the slot, you're not going to do that. So, moving forward, Driver had to make a decision. I mean, does he go out in this blaze of glory, huge celebration? Scott Walker was in the house. The mayor of Green Bay was in the house. I mean, it was quite the spectacle. Or do you try to play somewhere else? I got to think another team would have given him a year somewhere. What do you think? Do you think he could have played somewhere else?
He's 38. He dropped 3 out of 13 balls this year. I say it's 50-50. He gets another shot. Mm-hmm. Politicians, they like to be a part of these events, don't they, Tyler?
Hey, they do. And it was Donald Driver Day yesterday. So he did go out with the blaze of glory, and the fans are going nuts. He'll be in the Packers Hall of Fame. So, and that's the chapter, the book has closed on Donald Driver. Moving forward.
Interesting, the question on the assistant coach, right? I had a couple emailers. I'll just mention this. A couple emailers asked me, you know, they want the Packers to hire Donald as an assistant coach tomorrow or in the front office in some capacity. And I told a couple of them, I don't think he wants to do that. these guys, these assistant coaches, they work too hard.
That's what he said as well.
For too little pay compared to what the players have made. There's just no way. It's just a grinding job. You got no job security. Every 3 years on average, you're moving. I don't see Donald Driver ever doing that.
No, he's going to do a show with Katie Couric, he said. He's going to get involved with TV, do as many national things as he can. Dancing with the Stars definitely opened up some doors for him. So I don't think this is the last you're going to see a Donald Driver one way or another.
And just one more thing on assistant coaches. I mean, I guess fans sometimes don't realize the hours these guys put in, but it is incredible. They are the unknown foot soldiers who really, a lot of places they don't get even hardly a chance to talk to the media, and they're sequestered and whatever. But these are the guys who really work. They got no job security, man. Mm-hmm. They're making a good wage, but they earn every cent of that darn thing. They just had a union here now about 15 years ago. I think they've become unionized, but it's a tough job for assistant coaches. All right.
And while we're on assistant coaches, I know the ones here in Green Bay have had interviews blocked before.
Yes.
Another offseason, and they're not moving on to different jobs. What do you make of that? I mean, don't a few of these guys have opportunities? I mean, Driver was really singing the praises of Edgar Bennett. He's coach running backs. He's coach wide receivers. You think he'd get an opportunity to be an offensive coordinator somewhere?
And you know the process, Tyler, that you can let your contract expire, mm-hmm. and then you can go interview, right? But by making that decision a year prior, you're turning down you're turning down a raise, the automatic raise, and you're perhaps putting yourself in an awkward position with the head coach. Right. So these are all risks. And, you know, I know Edgar, among others on that staff, has had a chance to interview for an offensive coordinator. Packers turned him down.
Is that fair? Putting you on the spot here.
Yeah, it really is.
The Budweiser hot seat.
It depends who you talk to. I would tend to let guys go interview.
Yeah.
As a general rule, I really would.
You think you'd want that as your team? I mean, you'd want to send guys to bigger and better things.
The one thing the Packers then can say, though, is that if you stay with us, we'll promote from within, which they did with Tom Clements. They denied him a chance to interview for the Bears OC job. Mm-hmm. And then 2 years later, when it became open, when Philbin left, they gave him the job in Green Bay. So this has happened. It's happened with Ben McAdoo. So I understand that. But some guys never do get a chance to get promoted in Green Bay, and their chance to interview for a coordinator job is gone.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't. It's not a clear cut thing. And I get the whole. I believe when a couple years ago, you might have mentioned this in the story as well. Before the Giants game, a lot of guys were denied opportunities. And if you're Mike McCarthy, you want them to focus in on the playoffs, and definitely. But these guys got to look out for themselves as well. So,
sure do.
All right, but we digress. Let's go on to the next topic, Bob. Super Bowl. You were down there. How was it?
Oh, it's good. It's probably the best place to have a Super Bowl. I mean, 23,000 hotel rooms within a mile of the dome.
What?
Or a mile and a half of the dome. Yeah.
Is that even possible?
It's just packed in down there, you know? So it's the best. Everybody's walking from here to there, and, you know, it's party atmosphere USA, and everything's proximate. The teams are 8 blocks away from each other, the two teams. One's in a Hilton, one was in a big Marriott on Canal Street. You know, Canal Street's a block from Bourbon Street. It's wild, you know. The security's tight, and there doesn't seem to be any problems.
No problems.
No.
That's good. You know, it's good when there's no problems and Ray Lewis is involved with the Super Bowl. So we won't get into Atlanta. We're in New Orleans.
How was Ray, Tyler?
Yeah, Ray was so tired of Ray Lewis.
Are you?
The guy was a complete non-factor in the game. Wasn't he? I mean, he was a vulnerability.
I haven't studied the tape.
He looked terrible. Yeah, okay.
Right?
He was awful.
He was exploited.
He was awful. And you were at these press conferences with Ray Lewis during the week.
Yeah.
From afar, it was pretty insufferable. I mean, really. Does God care if the Baltimore Ravens win the Super Bowl? I think God probably has some other plans, some bigger plans. But the fact that he wouldn't talk about the murder investigation, the murder case, because it's quote-unquote God's time, get out of here. What was that like?
Well, that was one issue, and then the issue came up with the deer antlers.
Antlers spray.
Yeah, to come back from the torn triceps. Something helped him come back from that. I mean, Sports Illustrated wrote this thing. I don't deny the story at all.
And the guy that's involved, that runs this institution, this place, basically came out and said that Ray Lewis wanted to get back onto the field faster, and he helped him do that. And he just sees a fundamental difference with the NFL. The guy who runs this does not think it should be illegal because it's from the earth, it's natural, and I don't know. What did he make all of that? And was that really a Super Bowl storyline worth diving into?
Probably not, but it passes for hard news. And, you know, mm-hmm. It's a legit story. Let me just mention one thing on Ray Lewis, okay? I often thought, you know, Ray Lewis only played the Packers 4 times. And we can get into how the Packers almost were ready to take him in 96 draft. I think this story now has been told. But if you were a player coming out of college, Tyler, and you were a defensive player, and you were drafted by the Ravens in the last 17 years, you know Ray Lewis is going to dominate you and the entire team and the entire unit, right? And he's going to be doing the dance coming down the tunnel, and the focus is going to be on him, and he's a fantastic player. Would you want to play on Ray Lewis's unit?
Boy, you know, at his prime, I'm sure he made players around him better.
Yes, I mean, he did.
He is a Hall of Famer. Can't take that away from him. So, yeah, I think it's somebody you want on your team.
So I spoke with Phil Savage, who was their director of college scouting from 96 to 04, later became GM of the Browns. And I asked him that question. He said, Bob, he said, every time we talk to any player in his 9 years of the team and discussing about, you know, what do you think your possibility of maybe playing with the Ravens, this is before the draft, free agency and things like that, he said, every one of them, their eyes would just light up.
Mm-hmm.
And when I talked about 3 or 4 defensive players on the Ravens about this question, even now, the respect he holds there.
He does.
It's unreal, Tyler. I don't think people in this market, and I don't think, including me, really understood the kind of player he was and what he meant from a psychological, emotional level to that entire program. I mean, since they won that Super Bowl, it's been a heck of a team. They had a huge problem a year or two after that 0-0 Super Bowl with salary cap, and they had to cut a whole bunch of guys. But, you know, in the last 8-9 years, this has been as good as anybody in the league. They just haven't gotten all the way. And it's a great tribute to Lewis.
It is.
He's a shell of himself now, as you suggested.
He is.
But
at his peak.
14 absolutely. Of his 17 years.
I thought it was telling when I was down in Mobile at the Senior Bowl, talking to Nico Johnson at Alabama, the linebacker. He said that the Friday before all of his games, he'd pop in film and clips of Ray Lewis's speeches. You know,
what?
Yeah. He said it got him jacked up and that Ray Lewis has had a huge impact on his career at Alabama and his career as a linebacker. And he made a good point. You know, say what you want about Ray Lewis's game. It's not good. Yeah, what about 10 tackles? When he gets credited for 10 tackles, how many of those are actually legit, you think?
Hardly any.
But he said, look at that Ravens defense and just how well they played as a collective unit when he came back. Just by osmosis, his energy, his passion kind of spread throughout the unit. And that is hard to argue with.
It is. I agree. I became a bit of a believer, although I knew he can't really play anymore.
So you're a Ray Lewis apologist. Yeah. Last week we established you're president of the Philip Merlin fan club. This week you're a Ray Lewis apologist. You heard it here.
I'm not, and I'm glad I didn't have to cover that guy. Right?
Yeah.
All right, should we talk about the Green Bay draft in 96? Review that quickly.
Yeah, go back there.
This was Ron Wolf's guy. I mean, he fought for him. He championed the guy. He believed in the small junior. Linebackers were a lot bigger than on the inside, Tyler, back in 96. And he's 6'0" 3/8", 235, coming out of the U. Started for 2.5 years, made 1 million tackles, but he's tiny. He's really tiny back then. Wolf, that was Wolf's guy. And he lasted. I didn't think he'd last till 20. Green Bay's at 27. Baltimore's at 26. They call him. They're on the phone with him. They say, no way Baltimore's going to take it. Just stay patient, Ray, you're here. And they got blown out of the water when the Ravens took him. And then they took John Michaels. I don't know what their board was like at that point. And
that's unbelievable.
The boss. But Ray Lewis in Green Bay. Would he have played well in Green Bay? You know he would have played well. Would he have been accepted here?
Boy, if he went through all that, that's a great question. I don't know.
The Atlanta thing,
and who knows? I mean, maybe the lifestyle in Green Bay would have shaped him in some way, and he wouldn't have been such a knucklehead and gotten in all that trouble, too.
There were some great veteran players here.
Knucklehead's a soft way to put it.
True. Reggie White, Leroy Butler would have been there.
Right. You have to think Reggie White would have been a huge influence on him.
even more Leroy Butler.
Mm-hmm. And Leroy Butler.
He would have played in that back seven with Butler. Eugene Robinson would have been around him initially. George Kuntz would have been there. These were solid, solid people, man,
yeah,
who wanted to win and were unselfish in the to the nth degree.
It's unbelievable, these counterfactuals, when you look at these what-ifs, what could have happened if he was a Packer. But
right.
Okay, enough of Ray Lewis. Yeah. Balky. Rosendale, Wisconsin. I had no idea.
You've been through there.
Yeah.
On the way to Madison.
The speed trap of all speed traps, as you said.
Trent Baalke, a kid 15 years ago, he was an athletic director at Shanley High in Fargo, North Dakota. Do you believe that?
Unbelievable, yeah.
And he gets a break from networking, and it happens for him, and he becomes a scout, and he works for the Jets and the Redskins, and then the Niners. Scott McLuhan hires him, and Scott McLuhan, the former Packer, is a tremendous evaluator of talent, and Baalke works with him, and then McLuhan leaves the organization. And Baalke runs the 2010 draft by himself and does a great job. He gets Navarro Bowman.
Yeah.
He makes an excellent bunch of picks there. Iupati and Anthony Davis remakes their O-line that first draft. Gets Kaepernick and others in 2011. Done some things in free agency. So there you go. A kid from Rosendale, Wisconsin.
He's the one that really pushed them over the top into Super Bowl contention.
He hires Jim Harbaugh. He fought off Michigan, wanted to hire him. He turned that down. Others in the NFL, Stanford.
Yeah.
He hires Harbaugh and whatever his record is. So Trent Baalke, it's an inspirational story for any young kid in rural Wisconsin.
Yeah.
It truly is. Yep.
That was a great story you wrote during the Super Bowl week. I mean, Rose, how many people live in Rosendale?
About 1,000.
That's it. Yeah.
His mom worked in the bar business. They lived in a rented home just past the intersection there of Blumke's BP there. In fact, the family, I believe, whatever. So it was just, you know, it's something else.
Okay, so we get to the game, and we won't talk about the power outage. I'm sure that's been pontificated enough. But entertaining game. I mean, some ups and downs. Baltimore gets ahead. San Francisco comes back. You know, Kaepernick was outstanding, which, can we revisit a little debate we had a few weeks ago?
Sure.
A certain someone here said they made a bad decision.
Did I? I didn't go that strong.
You were pretty strong. I don't have the tape to play back, but
I said play Alex.
You said you were, yeah, you said play Alex Smith.
Well, they would have won the Super Bowl with Alex Smith.
Get out of here.
Maybe.
Get out of here. I don't know. They would agree. I think Green Bay beats them if Alex Smith is the quarterback.
Wow.
I do. They weren't ready for Kaepernick.
Wow.
They weren't prepared. Remember talking to some players leading up to that game, and I think it was Eric Walden. I said, are you prepared to play probably the most dynamic player you've seen to date? And he said, no, Kaepernick's good, but no, we've seen dynamic players. Christian Ponder, Joe Webb, Russell Wilson. None of them can even compare to what Kaepernick did to him. So they weren't ready for Colin Kaepernick.
Well, they weren't ready for Alex Smith on opening day either, were they, Tyler?
But they would have been ready for Alex Smith in the playoffs, wouldn't they have been? He's a caretaker, a game manager, cliches.
They had 4 months to prepare for Alex Smith on opening day. The schedule came out in April.
They did.
I'm battling back.
I think our buddy Tom Silverstein wrote this, though. You have to think that they were preparing a little bit more for the Chicago Bears that Thursday after that game. I mean, not to go back, but I don't know.
Oh, I don't see that.
Okay, all right.
I see that Niner. Ooh, wow.
Maybe I shouldn't put words in his mouth. I thought he wrote a story like that. But anyways.
Did he? Okay.
Alex Smith.
You're not high on him.
Not high on him.
Is he going to be a starter somewhere this year?
Probably. I mean, there's a lot of teams out there that need a quarterback. So, he's not Kaepernick. But, all right, so he was outstanding. The Ravens, Joe Flacco, what can you say? 11 touchdowns, no picks, Super Bowl MVP. Hell of a playoff, hell of a game for him.
He's better than everybody thought he was.
Yeah. Absolutely.
The Raven O-line, I thought it was an amazing story. I mean, they changed three. They put three different guys at three spots after the regular season finale. Osamele, the rookie from Iowa State. I mean, again, I haven't looked at that tape. I will when I write the book in a couple of years, I guess, for whatever next edition. But Justin Smith.
Non-factor.
He really was. Nothing.
Alden Smith.
Non-factor. And Bryant McKinney, the fat old Viking, he does the job, man. He really did.
And what about the Niners secondary? Physical bunch. They Baltimore attacked them downfield, and they really didn't have an answer. Chris Culver, who's under a little bit of fire during the week, he gets beat for a long play. Okay. So San Francisco secondary kind of let them down as well.
I agree. They didn't have the pass rush, and they've always been a better tackling physical bunch than covering bunch, and they got exposed.
You know, Jim Harbaugh was obviously ticked off at the end of the game that holding penalty wasn't called. These refs really did kind of let everybody play. I like that. They let them play. And that's a difficult call to make late in the game. But I think, boy, the play calling, more than anything, at the end of the game, for Jim Harbaugh, who's had such a great season, calling plays and calling the shots there for San Francisco, I don't know. I mean, why not give the ball to Frank Gore? You had the time. And just it seems like some questionable calls are late, and that might be the reason they weren't able to pull off the comeback.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't really think that much about play calling, but I mean, okay. The Ravens blitzed, well, I think three of those four plays.
They did. It
took a lot of guts by Dean Pease, the coordinator. You know, the Ravens were penalized twice for 20 yards in that game. Mm. The Niners, 5 for 33. They swallowed their whistles in the Super Bowl, Tyler.
They did.
Almost always do.
And that's a good thing. And then the league's got to get back to more of that, I think.
Right. All right. So let me interject. The officials also swallowed the whistle in Ann Arbor, Michigan a couple nights ago, enabling Michigan to defeat the Ohio State Buckeyes by 2. Jason Kraft was fouled on that last play.
Yeah, I saw that. That was a foul.
And I was dying cheering the blue on. But
what happened to Michigan there against Indiana, Bob?
They got outgunned.
They did.
Yeah. Now they're at Wisconsin Saturday, Tyler. And at the Breslin Center in East Lansing Tuesday night.
That's going to be some good stuff.
The Big Ten basketball race is great. Why do they have to have a Big Ten postseason tournament? Let this wonderful regular season stand for what it is.
No, put them in a tournament. Do or die. Tyler. Everybody gets a chance at the end.
Tyler.
Come on.
Play it. Okay.
Are you a Horizon League basketball fan? Do you get to any of these Phoenix games?
Yeah, I go to one or two a year.
Yeah, I went to a couple this year. More fans should really go. I thought there'd be more there. I guess the students weren't around for Christmas break, but good basketball.
Yep.
Okay, let's move on here. Right. We got into the offense and the defense season in review for the Packers. We didn't talk about the special teams, so I know you want to get into that.
Can't wait.
And the word, where's your Bart Scott voice there? Come on, give it another shot. Mason Crosby, obviously well documented. Struggled. Only David Akers struggled more than this guy. Kind of turned it around late, but what do you make of his season?
All right, he ranked 35th among guys with 10 or more attempts, right? But I guess, you know, his average distance per attempt of 41.8, it was much longer than in any of his other seasons. It also ranked second longest in the league to St. Louis's Greg Zuerlein. I mean, do people understand that he was attempting a lot of long field goals? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a bit of a mitigating. I mean, I never advocated dumping the guy. And he played out at the end of the year. I gave him a D. It could have been an F, but I believe a solid D. He kicked off well, and I think he'll be better next year.
Is there such a thing as a solid D?
There is, and this stuff there is. God. You take home a D after that, you know? It's not all bad.
I'm with you. I mean, he's you know, yeah, I guess you give Green Bay credit for sticking with the guy and not panicking and throw him to the curb. Now they have an offseason to kind of let everything digest. He was kicking a lot of long field goals and just wasn't making them.
Yeah, we've got to cut the guy a little slack. Okay. So he had a rough 2 months.
He did.
But he was kicking bombs, so, you know.
He was. Right. And, you know, he faced the music. He didn't back down, so we'll see if he can turn around. The guy, I mean, just a year ago, he made how many consecutive field goals and set a team record. So we'll see if he bounces back. I doubt that they go in a new direction at kicker.
Correct? I agree.
Okay. Tim Maste, you gave him a B-.
Yeah.
What did you see?
Punting has really improved around the league. My gosh, it is amazing how much better these punters are than 20, 30, 10 years ago even. The nets are way up. The percentage of touchbacks are so much diminished. Inside the 20 rate is a lot better. These guys can all kick directional. They all got this Aussie punt. I mean, based on what Green Bay's had over the years, you could give Maste an A based on his own franchise. But compared to the league, he's a B-.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, nothing.
We got to talk about the return game. I mean, really, that was an key storyline late in the season. I mean, maybe that 49ers game is totally different if Jeremy Ross doesn't fumble there. I mean, that really turned things around. You know, we were at Mike McCarthy, if you recall, after the Titans game, I believe, late in the season, kind of scoffed at the notion that you can't play scared. Randall Cobb is going to be back there, and really kind of deflected any of those theories that, hey, maybe you stick with Jeremy Ross there as a returner and leave Cobb to offense. Aaron Rodgers even chimed in himself and said that they should take Randall Cobb off special teams. So Mike McCarthy says that. They get into the playoffs, and who's returning a punt deep in his own end? None other than Jeremy Ross. What do you make of that?
Fine by me.
Fine by you.
I believe in Jeremy Ross. I really do.
I like him too. You know, bright guy, confident guy. I think he could have a future here. But you know, that I guess that mistake is probably gonna sit in his conscience here for the offseason.
I agree. It was a killer. I wouldn't second guess it personally, but I can see what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, no, I'm just saying what Mike McCarthy was saying. I think that that's probably the way to go moving forward. You can't have Randall Cobb out there touching the ball as much as he is. I mean, they really dodged a lot of bullets out there. He does a good job of kind of avoiding the big hit,
mm-hmm.
but he was upended there against San Francisco. Mm-hmm. I believe a hit against Chicago comes to mind when he was running the ball between the tackles. So if you're going to use him creatively on offense, do all these things that they want to do, he's a go-to guy at this point. Well, I know there's Wes Welker, there's Darren Sproles, other guys that are able to handle all of this, but it's going to be difficult to put him out there as a returner next season. Because
so
Jeremy Ross showed potential. Had the big return against Tennessee. He's a fast guy.
He's a big guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's strong. So he's got to make the team at wideout. And so you got, assuming Jennings is gone, you got Nelson, Jones, Cobb, and Boykin. Ross would be there, right there, too.
Correct.
Right? Is there anybody else?
Well, you have to think they might draft somebody.
Absolutely. I don't think there's any, none that they've signed yet off the street. No.
It'll be interesting. You know, we talked all about Greg Jennings' situation before, but
yeah,
that's probably a position, a time, an off season where Ted Thompson can replenish and get a receiver. That's really how he built this offense. Anything else you want to talk about special teams, Wes?
No, they finished 12th in the Dallas Morning News survey.
Yeah, your buddy Rick Gosling.
Correct.
A great job.
12 is good. Yep.
I mean, Sean Slocum, he was under fire there a couple years ago, but overall, he's done a good job there. All right, let's move forward. You pronounce this guy's name. CFL.
Jovan Olafioe. Olafioe.
Olafioe.
Yeah. Nigerian Sosopo? Nightmare. He's a Nigerian nightmare.
Okay.
Talked to the kid. His dad was born in Nigeria. His mom's from Detroit. And came out of North Carolina Central. He's good. He's an athletic kid. He started for 3 years for the BC Lions in the CFL. He was named outstanding O-lineman this year in the league. Outstanding lineman, as they describe it.
Mm-hmm.
He was number 2 in 2011. He worked out for 15 to 20 teams last year.
Mm-hmm.
This time a year ago, signed with St. Louis. Hadn't been taking his blood pressure medicine. And when he went to St. Louis 2 days later, he had some problems. And the Rams cut him, failed physical. Went back to BC, played every game, got all this under control, made his first visit this year. He's a free agent to Green Bay, met with Packer people, assorted people, and was told by the team's medical department that they wouldn't take the risk, that they expect him to play and sign in the league with somebody this year, but they're not doing it. He doesn't meet their standards. The kid was disappointed.
Yeah, you talked to him.
Wanted to play here. He's more of a left tackle, right tackle guy. 6'5 and a half, 320. Talked to a pro scout. He is athletic, raw and inconsistent, which is to be understandable coming out of North Carolina Central, an FCS team, and CFL. So I don't think the Packers will revisit it, and I think within a week or two, you'll probably see him sign somewhere else.
Okay, so the question is, does Green Bay exploring this CFL outstanding lineman kind of indicate a motive this offseason that they have to get better on the offensive line, at tackle specifically, like you said? You were pretty critical of Marshall Newhouse this season. Is tackle a position where maybe they need to bring in a guy, or do you see them maybe just reshuffling with what they have? I mean, Don Barclay, Brian Bulaga, Derek Sherrod, we don't even know if he can play yet, but it's a position that's under the microscope this offseason.
I think the pursuit of this, the guy from the CFL definitely is an indication mm-hmm. they think they got to do something. They got Andrew Datko off the practice squad, exactly.
Right.
They sign a guy, Kevin Hughes, who's more of an undersized tackle, played 44 snaps for the Rams in 2011. He's off the Chargers practice squad. They just signed him, so he'll be in a shot. They got all these short tackles. I mean, Newhouse, Barkley are 6'4", Hughes is 6'3.5". I mean, that's not what you want. I think they're going to draft old lineman in the first three rounds for sure.
Well, we'll be down there in Indianapolis for the NFL Combine, so it'll be interesting to see who performs well. I mean, you look at the Eric Fisher, Central Michigan, he's going to go high, but he was outstanding in Mobile. The former high school quarterback at Oklahoma, Lane Johnson, he's an intriguing prospect. So there's some guys that they'll look at early on. Okay, one other offseason storyline that we should get into. Talk to Carl Poston this week, Charles Woodson's agent. Try to get a sense for that situation. It's going to be interesting. You know, at his current salary cap figure, $10 million plus potential incentives, hard to see Green Bay bringing him back at that. Now, Poston said that the Packers haven't given Woodson or him any indication that he wouldn't be back, which I guess they wouldn't. They don't have to make a decision or do anything quite yet. But that's a lot of money for a guy who's getting up there in age, who moved from corner to safety. You don't know exactly how his playmaking ability translates there quite yet. Played about 9 games, including the playoffs. Physical in the run game, which they needed against Adrian Peterson, but took some chances here and there. And as Darren Perry says, their safeties coach, you can't necessarily do what he did as a slot corner at safety. So what's the price? I mean, this is what Poston said, is Green Bay's got to make a decision. Is Charles Woodson worth having around at $11 million, he said? Can they restructure? Can they find a number? Can they find a common ground? That's kind of what they're going through right now, Bob.
They have to decide if they really want the player on the team, right? They have to decide what they want to pay him. They have to decide medically about this collarbone. Could it go again? It's been twice in 3 years, right?
And I thought Poston made an interesting comment on that. He said that physically he thought his client was 100% in the playoffs, but that was a factor at the end of the year. So he said that right now the collarbone's not an issue, that he's perfectly fine. He talked to him during the Super Bowl. But you have to think about it. 2 collarbones, and he's getting up there.
I think you do, especially when you're talking about big money and then going on IR and, you know, being paid the full salary. You're not going to ask Charles Woodson to sign a injury waiver for the collarbone. That's just, you know, preposterous. You don't do that. So I don't know. The league year starts March 12th, mm-hmm. and it's a big 9.4, it is, right? The cap count.
Mm-hmm.
And that starts March 12th when you get to count the top 51. So when they start the league year.
So when you have to worry about Aaron Rodgers, BJ Raji, Clay Matthews, those potential extensions, maybe you want to do something in free agency. Maybe you want to bring back some of your other guys. That's when that comes into play. Is you probably want to make a decision on Charles Woodson before then. So you don't. I mean, maybe they can stomach his salary through the offseason before that bonus, the first day training camp. But probably not, you would think.
I would think not, right.
I don't know. I mean, it's interesting because here are your options at safety. Morgan Burnett, like you pointed out, one of 2 defensive players in the NFL to play every snap.
Mm-hmm.
So he's one of your starting safeties. You can go young with MD Jennings and Jerron McMillan again. McMillan showed some potential, but is he ready for that role? We don't know. Maybe they go in a totally different direction and they draft somebody early. Maybe they sign a veteran. They have some options there. Jarius Byrd, I mean, he's going to get a big contract this free agency. I believe Deshaun Golson, San Francisco, is a free agent. And Sean Richardson, interesting guy. You're high on him. 6'1". He was on end of the season on IR. Maybe he's an option as well. Or you like Charles Woodson, you restructure, you bring him back, and he's your starting safety. A lot of different options here. You're Ted Thompson, Bob. You're Ted. What are you doing?
I don't know. He's got all the tape. He's got all the experts advising him. I don't. I can't. I don't know.
I don't think you can just write Woodson off right now. I think you really have to seriously consider keeping him around. I mean, he's as at Dom Capers, as everybody says, the guy has made a ton of big plays here. 100 games with the Packers, great numbers across the board. Maybe it doesn't necessarily translate to safety as well as they think, but that was his first season making the transition. Let's see what he can do Round two, possibly. They don't really necessarily need him as a slot corner anymore. Nickel. Casey Hayward.
Right.
He's their guy there.
Right, right.
Complex situation and a lot of time to get into it. Anything else with the offseason you want to get into? I mean, we're like I said, we'll be doing this all offseason, Bob. So giving me the wide eyes. We'll get into stuff. Let's get into some Twitter questions on here from you guys. This one comes from at Balding Pastor Randy Sen, one of our good friends on Twitter in the Twitter sphere. What are the chances that AJ Hawk has played his last game as a Packer? Pretty loaded question. He's another player. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but he's due a lot of money next season. I believe you gave him a B in your grades.
B minus.
Sorry, didn't make two straight seasons. Zero sacks. Zero forced fumbles. Not a lot of big plays. You know what you're going to get with A.J. Hawk. He knows the defense, puts guys in the right position. Do they give him another year? Do they maybe restructure? It's the same kind of debate we're having here with Charles Woodson. It's pretty early. What's a possibility there, Bob?
I would think he'd probably be back in some capacity if I had to bet.
Okay.
I don't know.
They do get Desmond Bishop back. And that's big. They need him against these teams like San Francisco and Atlanta. But you have to think that maybe they do bring in an athletic linebacker in the draft, early, middle rounds, who knows. They get DJ Smith back as well. Nick Perry, who knows what they have in him right now.
They
so,
got Terrell Manning, Francois Lattimore.
You're talking inside
there,
yeah.
Are they going to re-sign Brad Jones? They got a bunch of people inside.
They do.
Do they need AJ?
I'm not quite sure. I think if you're Green Bay, at this point, you'd like to see more big plays. I remember Winston Moss saying that last offseason is they need A.J. Hawk to make more big plays. They, you know, they like what he brings to the table as far as getting everybody in the right spot. But at this point, I think you kind of know what you're getting in A.J. Hawk, and it's a matter of how much money is he worth because of those extensions they got coming down the pipe. Okay, let's get to another one here. This comes from Steve, our buddy. Will we have a truly new-look Packers personnel next season? And he lists off some guys. End of the Favre-era players. I believe he's talking about the roster and a lot of the turnover there. Do you see just this upheaval roster-wise with Charles Woodson, Greg Jennings? He mentions Ryan Grant, Donald Driver. I think a lot of those guys are coming to the end of their careers, but they're a young team. They're one of the youngest teams in the league, and they're going to replenish the roster as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I think there's going to be some pretty dramatic change in this roster, don't you?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. And it's already underway. We'll see what they do with Charles Woodson, and hard to see Ryan Grant coming back.
Right.
Okay, David Kaiser, at 87 Kaiser, he says, I think the Packers had interest in Chris Canty when he was a free agent, which they did, not as much as the Giants, apparently. Does he still fit what they need at defensive end?
He's got length. He's, 31, 32? I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
He's played inside in a 4-3 the last 3 years, probably. He was a 3-4 guy in Dallas as an end before that. I'm not sure. I don't really know how he played this year. I can't say.
Not either. I mean, obviously, he has the body type, like you said. On paper, he would fit into what they need, but he's a veteran. A lot of tread on the tires. Defensive end's an interesting position because last year they go for that quote-unquote juice. That was the buzzword. Mike Daniels, Drewworthy, Anthony Hargrove, Daniel Muir. They bring in all these fast guys up front. They want to get this rotation system down. And they really still miss Cullen Jenkins, a big body that can anchor the edge. Still a need on this defense.
Yep.
Okay, and last question comes from Matt Beauvais. I believe I pronounced that right. At Ray Robert 9 asks, with a lot of teams having to already cut high-priced veterans, you mentioned the Giants. They're quite the purge there. Will the Packers be doing the same soon? Obviously, decisions to make on Woodson and Hawk, like we just talked about. But I don't see them just cutting a bunch of guys. That's just not the makeup of the team. They don't have a lot of these inflated contracts they have to get rid of right now.
You don't have to do it till March 12, when the start of the league year. That's when you got to be under that cap of Green Bay's cap's going to be around 120.5, something like that. No. Count the adjustment. I think their cap's going to be at 127, the carryover from last year.
Okay. Right.
The league average is about 120.5. So you don't have to do anything now. The top 51 guys against your cap count as of March 12 at, I think, 3 p.m. Central.
Hmm.
So that's when you got to do it. You know, the Lions cutting Peterman and Vandenbosch, I think they're just doing a favor to those guys to give them extra time to give them another month to try to get a job somewhere else, which is, you know, if you don't want a player, it's a nice thing to do. Yeah, it really is.
It is, definitely. We'll see what Green Bay does.
Right.
I think that's going to do it for today, Bob.
I think so.
And we'll get into some pre-combine stuff next week, possibly. Is there a next week? We're going to do this again? What do you say?
Next week, huh?
We shall see. All right. I guess we'll stay tuned. I'll talk to him. I'll work on Bob. We'll figure it out. We'll get him to do this at the McGinn compound. Thanks a lot for joining, everybody. We're going to send you off with a little more Trampled by Turtles.
Let's have it.
Hey, it's Boxer.
And I'm Sarah Towns with Experience Columbus.
Did you know Columbus is home to the number one science museum in the country?
Ranked number 7 on Food & Wine's list of America's next great food cities.
And one of Condé Nast Traveler's top 10 best big cities in America.
Yes, Columbus. An Experience Columbus podcast keeps you in the know about what's happening in the Arch City.
Binge, listen to all the current episodes.
Or catch up on all things Columbus and discover what makes this city so special.
By the end, you'll be asking yourself, can all of this really exist in one city?
Yes, Columbus.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.